Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. That's right, Tuesday. How are you? Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How are you, lurking conservatives? What's going on, people? What's going on? Is everything all right? I'm all jacked up on the chocolate thanks to some listeners who sent us, who is it? Charlie and Jennifer, Riley. Did you see that box?
Yeah, I saw it. Box?
That box.
They had to bring that in with a hand truck.
On a truck. There was like chocolates and cookies and peanut brittle and mustard. I didn't use
them. Asparagus.
I ate all of it.
No, I did not.
I'm just eating these.
You're scaring me.
Ghirardelli chocolates from San Francisco. And I'm tripping, man. I'm tripping. So look, man, I went into a partnership yesterday with the guys over at the Marino Fish and Sons. Marino and Sons Fish.
Really?
Yeah, I walk in there yesterday. They're like, what's going on? I said, well, I'm moving back to L.A. And they're like, you should just play the lottery. Play the King Kong jackpot, $50 million. And I'm like, really, it's $50 million? And I'm not one to play the lottery. And then I'm like, all right, well, I'll go buy a ticket. And they're like, why don't we go? We'll go in partnership. And now all of a sudden, I'm like, what does that mean? And they're like, give me $3. So here I am at the fish counter, and I'm giving $3. They're giving $3. So now I'm into these guys for, like, we're in it together
for $10.
For you. $10. It was $10 for 10 picks that are usually $2 a pop, $50 million. Now I'm in this awkward situation where what if I win? I got to go to the Marino Brothers, huh? And yeah. ask for my money.
Yeah, but what happens if they win? You think they're going to know you?
But that's, we're all in the same thing.
That's
what I said to him. I said, well, what if you win? How can I trust you? And he takes the ticket out. He had written all our names on the top of it, and he put it in the drawer under the register. He's like, I got it right here. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess that's good enough.
So how does it get split? Three ways or two ways?
Okay. Yeah.
So do you get 25
million? Oh, no, I can't do this.
See, that's the problem, because there's two of them. So now you're going to have to divide it three ways, which is actually inequitable because you split the ticket.
Well, man. Well, here's what I did. Thank God. I protected myself. I went and bought my own ticket as well. But wait, I don't even know what that means. What kind of thinking is that? It's like, you know what, those guys, we did a good thing, and it's going to be fun if we win, and we'll see how that divvies up, and I'm going to keep my back and go get my own ticket with different numbers on it, huh? That's thinking. See, I got it all figured out there.
You're definitely your father's son.
No, my father. The guy called up, he's miserable. He's like, what's the matter, Dad? I just can't believe I didn't win the lottery.
Uh-oh.
Really can't believe it. Yeah, the system, huh? It didn't work out for you. I'll tell you. So we'll see what happens with that. I don't usually play the lottery, but given that, wouldn't it be great though? I mean, I can understand why people hinge their beliefs on that. Yeah, even if you're not a religious person, I mean, there's something about that. That there's something about the possibility of winning $50 million. That the idea that's like all it takes is $2. But that's how you get hooked. There are some dudes that spend like $400-$500 a week. Man,
oh, I know.
If not
know.
More, it's like Vegas.
Need is a dollar and a dream. That used to be their slogan.
It's like a taste. You can just taste it, man. If I had $50 million, you know what I would do? I would give some to Jesse so he could do whatever he wanted, because he deserves it.
He already does whatever he wants.
Jesse Summers. Really? You think he wants to get up at 12 at night? Jesse Summers, who is Rachel's bitch boy.
Wait a minute. Let's not do that to the brother.
Is he a brother now? Look, I'm sorry, man. That's not what is your position exactly, Jesse? Are you an associate producer, a glorified? What is on your business?
As far as I know, I'm the liberal propagandist.
That you do the daily briefings.
Unfortunately,
You're on.
Hey, you know what?
That Pashman used to do. You do the daily briefings. You're the propagandist.
Can we find the thing that he did for us that time when he went down in the street? That was one of the funniest things I ever heard.
Early on, we sent
him down in the street.
Jesse started as our intern, and now he's
moving on up like George and Weezy.
He's quitting. Actually,
you're quitting, man.
Yeah,
you're leaving
on Friday. It's my last day.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
It's a week shy of my last day. Where are you going?
Well, I mean, I think the grad school thing is probably where I'm going for a
long time. Oh, you wish. Chickening out.
I know.
What is it with so many people that work here going back to school?
Wait, are you kidding? They're hinging their bets on this place? But
wait, come on. You're hinging your bets on the lottery. What's the difference?
It's about the same odds.
No, grad school is a place where frightened smart people go when they realize they can't face reality.
Bingo.
Bingo.
Wow.
Well, good for you. What are you going to be studying? I'm sure it's going to be practical.
It's going to be a joint JD MBA program. So
what does that even mean, man?
Law school?
It means that if the business thing doesn't work out, then I can just go back to Daddy's law firm.
There you go.
Do you have a law degree now? No.
No, no. But
so you haven't even started it?
No, not at all.
So you're going to be a lawyer?
If worse comes to worse, I suppose so.
Hey, Carl Ginsburg was a lawyer, you know, with a dream, and look where he is now. He's right down there. Look at everyone's like, do we have to talk about this? There's some great, great, great lawyers at work here. The thing about lawyers is I've said this before, that I think lawyers generally are brilliant, charismatic people that just don't have the courage to live out their dreams, and they're going to make everyone else pay for it.
Well, the fact is, I was here for the Marin cult of charisma, and now that, you know, you may be shipping off, it's kind of like I have to be moving on.
Come to L.A., dude. Come to L.A. I mean, I can, you know, your hours would be better. We'd hang out. You could sleep in my garage.
It's about where I'm sleeping now. The salary they're paying me.
Wow. Now, boy, things are going.
Parting shots.
And by the way, we took exactly. Took Friday. He's going to TP the whole place. He can spray paint like, this place sucks. Look, yesterday, so you're making some complaints here. Yesterday, we took some political action. Brendan McDonald went into the bathroom here and took a hacksaw to the single-sheet dispenser toilet paper things. And you can go to our website at morningsedition.com and see that action taking place. Is there something you want to destroy before you go?
No, I have nothing but fond memories of Air America.
Really? Hang around another week. Who knows what's going to happen next week, man? I got like a week left. I could blow it all. I'm not going to, man. Out of respect for myself. Do you understand what I'm saying? This place has been nothing but good to me. Do you want to do some news? What are people calling about? Jenna's in the hospital. Jenna, put her on. Jenna, our great listener from Minnesota, who's been in the hospital for what seems like a week now, had surgery on her knees, and she calls every day because she doesn't have a radio in the hospital, and they put her on hold so she can hear the show. Jenna, how are you this morning? You okay?
Yeah, I'm in a different place.
You're in a new hospital?
I'm in a nursing home.
You're in a nursing home?
Nursing home.
Yeah. Because,
all right,
they put you there until you finish your rehab.
Oh, so it's like a physical therapy thing? It's a holding zone?
Yeah.
All right, did you get your breakfast OxyContin yet?
No, they're not so good here.
Oh, you sound a little sad today, Jenna. I'm sorry. Why don't we check back with you in a little while after you have some, after you wake up a little bit?
I feel all right.
Okay. All right. So how long are you going to be in the hospital?
Like 3 more weeks.
Oh, my God. Well, I'll be here for a week and a half of that. I'll check in with you every day.
Well, yeah, thanks.
Okay, Janet. Have a good one. Have a good morning.
Take care, Janet.
She's a little, get a little rough. You know, when you lay around for days in the hospital, it gets a little sad.
Well, I think they just moved her to, if they moved her to a new place, and if she's either just waking up or if the meds are just taking effect.
Yeah, but she was a little funner. Listen to me, I'm expecting, like, why didn't Jenna perform for us this morning? Do you know what I mean? Last week we talked to her about an hour in, and she was all juiced up on OxyContin. She was in a better hospital. She was chipper. We were having a good time. This morning I felt like she was a little sad. We're going to have to check in with her in about an hour. I don't want to put pressure on her, but my heart goes out to her. I mean, it's hard to sit there in the hospital. Hey, but my heart does not go out to Tom DeLay at all. Yesterday, a judge in Texas dismissed the conspiracy charges against the DeLay man, against the bug-killing dwarf king of the legislative pig pack. But it's not over. You know, I actually see this as a good thing, and we'll explain to you why in just a second. It's 14 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Good morning.
Dateline, New York, the city we built on rock and roll. Hi, kids. This is your War on Brains correspondent, Mort Milvington, reminding you to always stay informed. And when you can't do that, try listening to Morning Sedition every morning here on Air America Radio, your Xanadu, now with Splenda.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Newsman Wayne Gilman stars as the slickest, coolest private dick ever to move to the suburbs with his sister and her two young children in Make room for News Daddy.
Uncle News Daddy, can you tell us a bedtime story?
I sure can. Once upon a time, there was me and two foxy young ladies.
Wayne, don't you dare tell those kids that story.
Can a hardcore private eye adjust to life in the burbs?
I told you punks not to walk across my lawn. Now you're going to get a lesson News Daddy style.
Be there for all the heartwarming fun.
Ice cream,
all right.
Wait, he's driving away.
He ain't going nowhere. Get your uncle a rocket pop.
Mister, can I get my ball out of your yard?
Make your move, sucker.
This has been Make Room for News Daddy on Morning's Edition Radio Theater. This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, that's 20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's Tuesday. I didn't think I'd have this much energy, but thanks to Charlie and Jennifer for the most amazing gift basket I've ever seen in my life. Unbelievable. Italian chocolates, peanut brittle, cookies, mustard, asparagus, pickled asparagus.
Cheese spread,
salami. It's unbelievable. I'm going to have to bring a treadmill into my office and eat it at the same time. Can you do that? That's how crazy I am, man. I'm nuts. I'm going to get on the treadmill and lose weight while I eat. That's crazy, man. I'm living on the edge. Yesterday, a judge in Texas dismissed the conspiracy charges against Tom DeLay. DeLay and his co-defendant, fundraisers John Caliandro and James Willis, are definitely not in the clear, folks. Just because the judge dismisses charges on this one because he decided that the conspiracy provisions in the state election code did not go into effect until a year after the charges. But the money laundering sticks. To me, Riley, this means that this is good because a lot of us are so suspect of these guys slipping through everything, of getting off on everything, of getting away with everything. It's hard for us to have the hope necessary to see that these guys are really going to be strung up by their legs or their necks or whatever. But it seems to me.
No states have hanging anymore, do they?
For this guy, maybe they should have it just because I hate him so much. But that's wrong. And I talk out of school there. But what I want to say is that to me, it's encouraging because this means that the money laundering thing is a real thing. The judge has gone over these charges, and it's going to stick, and he's going to have to go to trial.
Well, here's the positive backstory to all that, all right? By dismissing one charge, keeping two, it means that DeLay cannot now contest the House Majority Leadership next year, which was his end game. He thought the judge, Pat Priest, was going to dismiss all charges against him, which would allow him to try
back
and retake
to work.
The post.
Right.
Not now, he's not.
So that's over.
Yeah, that's over. Plus, he's still got the Jack Abramoff stuff swirling just to his left.
So he's finished.
He's essentially done. And remember, who was it we were talking to just yesterday, I think it was?
That was John Nichols.
John Nichols, talking about the fact that the Sharks are, DeLay's blood's been in the water for a couple months now as far as even some of his colleagues are concerned. So now the question is, which Viper is going to take his place?
It's amazing how much of that loyalty in the GOP is just based on fear and opportunism.
And power.
And power, absolutely. And this guy was a facilitator of power. Now he's completely crippled to the point where our crippled VP goes down there. Dick Cheney's going to go down there and do a fundraiser.
That was yesterday. Right. And what's interesting about
it's more like a telethon than a fundraiser.
Fundraiser, yeah. And you know what? You know what's funny about
yeah.
it? Coming as it did on the same day that the judge made the decision,
mm-hmm.
they've all the media is now calling it a previously scheduled fundraiser,
right.
as opposed to something that he planned on the spur of the moment to go down and help the guy out.
Throwing the guy a line.
Yeah, in other words, well, I had to go. I mean, after all, I promised.
Yeah, he's drowning. Throw him a life preserver.
Absolutely.
President Bush has denied the use of torture by the U.S. against terrorists, which is crazy. Maybe he hasn't been told. I doubt that. I say it doesn't make a difference. It's his watch. He has to answer for it. But for the first time, someone in the neocon death cult has responded to international criticism and outcry over the CIA-run torture prisons, or black sites, as they're called, in Eastern Europe. This was Condoleezza Rice, and she said, quote, "We will use every lawful weapon to defeat these terrorists," end quote. She refused to answer questions specifically about black sites by saying, quote, "We cannot discuss information that would compromise the success of intelligence, law enforcement, and military operations. We expect other countries to share this view," end quote. This pitch is that the tactics in place, no matter what they are, have stifled terrorist plots and schemes around the world. It's really a hard sell, Riley, if you look at the numbers in terms of international terrorism going up, in terms of Iraq now a terrorist manufacturing facility. And also, what I need to ask you is that The law that they're talking about, when they make reference to laws, to honoring the law, this is an administration that has pushed aside Geneva Convention and really determined their own laws about what torture is and who they can torture, and they're imposing that on the rest of the world.
Well, yeah, what they're doing is parsing the English language, parsing American law as opposed to international law, which the Bush administration pays scant attention to try and dance around the issue. And see, what we don't realize as Americans is that this has really, this whole renditioning thing, the whole black sites thing has really pissed the Europeans off.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, it has exposed some of the Eastern European countries who just joined the European Union to the possibility of being expelled if they can prove these black sites existed in those countries. People don't talk about it.
Well, this is the thing, is that the presidents or chairmen of these countries that get into a relationship with the United States and allow this stuff to happen on their soil is going behind the backs of their people as well.
Yes.
I mean, in Germany, the German government spokesman, this guy Ulrich Wilhelm, has a flight log of over 400 overflights and landings by planes suspected of being used by the CIA. This is an ally, and when Condoleezza Rice goes there today or tomorrow, she's going to have to answer to this stuff. And we've had reports of this for months.
For months.
That this extraordinary rendition has gone on, does go on, and now that it is pretty much apparent that these prisons are in Eastern Europe, those governments are going to have to answer to their people, as this government's going to have to answer to our people, which it doesn't seem to care. It seems to me that Condoleezza Rice is just putting it out there, saying, screw you, we decide the laws, for the world, either you get on board or we don't care about you. Now, is this her big national security ramp to her candidacy in 2008?
Well, she says she doesn't want to run, but she's the only Bush administration official who has a positive rating above about 40%. So at this point, she's all they've got.
Right.
She's got to be the one that goes out. You notice they're not sending Rummy. They're not sending Cheney. He's busy with delay in Houston. They've got to send Condoleezza Rice, A, because she doesn't want to be in the States anyway. You notice how much she travels. But see, what the Europeans are saying is, if you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
Right. And it's amazing to me that Rumsfeld, they certainly won't send that guy. Whenever he opens his mouth, it's trouble.
Well, yeah, he's just complaining about media coverage of the Iraq war, which is the same thing he did last month.
But he said that Rumsfeld said yesterday, we need to stop, quote, we need to stop defining success in Iraq as the absence of terror attacks. By the way, he also said, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. When we come back, in a couple of minutes anyways, we'll talk a little bit about the economy, but I want to get back into this conversation about Japanese cars versus American cars, because it really spurred on a lot of emails. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Countdown. 9 more Morning Sedition shows, my friends. We're going to talk about the Saddam Hussein trial in a few minutes, because what a show that is, huh, Riley?
It is, man.
The dude is stealing the hearts of the world again. Without guns.
Docudrama.
Well, it's unbelievable that this guy can really hold a room. He can get up there. I'm no huge fan of Saddam Hussein's, but I'll tell you, by giving the opportunity, he's showing that he's definitely not afraid. He's got a certain amount it's not even standoffishness. The guy still believes that he is the president of that country legitimately, and I think by letting this circus go on like this, they risk making him a sort of folk hero in that country.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like this imperial arrogant charisma that he generates. And I mean, the difference is, in the Iraqi courts, anybody can question witnesses. You don't have to, it's not just the prosecution and the defense, and, you know, somebody can judge, hey, you, and that's what he's doing. He's taking full advantage of the Iraqi court system. But I got a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think there's anything wrong with Ramsey Clark defending Saddam Hussein?
No, I don't.
Neither do I. I just wonder because I saw, you know, I was flipping channels yesterday. I saw some show where there was some conservative commentator woofing about the fact that, you know, Ramsey Clark is a traitor. He shouldn't be defending Saddam Hussein. We're at war. They always dig up the we're at war thing when they want to make a point.
Well, I think it's interesting if they do want to model a democracy in any way, a parliamentary democracy on the English system or our system, that to engage in that, to give someone who is clearly guilty and a criminal the opportunity to have an intelligent and decent, sophisticated defense is part of that game.
Yeah, and a full and fair trial. And right. Certainly he's getting that.
Right. So we'll talk about that in a little more. But sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From Minneapolis, Star Tribune, GOP pushing for spending and tax cuts. GOP pushing for spending and tax cuts. Translation, Congress does last-minute Christmas shopping for themselves. From Associated Press, McCain won't compromise on torture ban. McCain won't compromise on torture ban. Translation, McCain puts the thumb screws to Cheney. Because to torture the thumb screws. God! I need more chocolate. Go get me that box. From this is like the old days, man. More M&Ms. Where's my Dunkin' Donuts coffee? I got to listen to those old shows where I'm just like.
No, you don't.
Remember the amazing, great feel? Remember when we realized that I wasn't crazy? It was really the chocolate. I used to drink two or three of those huge Dunkin' Donuts coffees and then eat a bag or two of M&Ms and then get on the air like, Pah!
And have a British woman antagonize you the whole time.
Oh, my God. If I were as a religious person, I'd have to go get some forgiveness. Here we go, from ABC News. Open season starts for New Jersey Black Bears. Open season starts for New Jersey Black Bears. Translation, Smokey gets whacked. Sad.
Sure is.
Kill those bears, but they'll make the...
Hey, they're impinging on human property.
There's that, and then there's the overpopulation is the one they use for deer populations. But I guess that's sort of true. It's weird. I'm sort of on the fence with some hunting. You know, I definitely think hunting cats is bad.
And I'm not into hunting at all.
I'm not into it. I don't do it. I would never do it. The one time I shot an animal, I felt awful about it, and it was just horrible. It was one of those sort of teenage kind of. It was junior high, and I was at the friend's house who's got the pellet gun, and it was one of those sort of like, come on, dude, do it things. You know, and we were in the barn. His family had a barn, and I shot this pigeon, and I'm going to cry now. I felt bad. I felt so bad, and there's nothing you can do after you do something like that to take it back or to make it right.
You killed it, did you?
I killed the pigeon, yeah. And it still hurts me now.
I've only killed rats.
Yeah?
Yeah, and that's by hand. I've never shot anything.
Oh, my God. Are you like jujitsu rat killer? What do you mean by hand?
I mean I took a frying pan and went upside its head.
I just pictured you like, you know, putting a, bap, bap, bap. And just
put a matrix on his ass. No.
Yeah, just sort of like, bang, pow. We digress. Let's talk about this car thing, because every time I talk about getting a car on the air, I get flack.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I've had this 95 Camry for a few years. I bought it used. Before that, I drove a 93 Honda for years, and it was my dad's car. I drove that till I had 160,000 miles on it. Then we sold it to the guy across the street, still running well. The Toyota Camry still running well. So on some level, why wouldn't I buy another Japanese car? I brought up with him.
Mm-hmm.
I've never bought a new car in my life. I am on the precipice of buying my first new car, Riley. I bought in the 80s, I had an 85 Golf, which was, was one of the best cars I ever had. Bought that used. When I was a kid, my family had a 87, I think an 87 Camaro, which was garbage. My brother had an Oldsmobile or a Buick that really wasn't that good. And every time I talk about the Japanese cars, even when I thought I found a way into this, which was that some of them are made here. I got flack because it's made in red states, and they don't honor the union. It's what's that law called? The free the
oh,
work?
Right what to is, work
right
laws.
To work laws.
Yeah, but see, now here's the question for you. Which and this is interesting because it came up in a letter to the Detroit Free Press. Is Mexico a red state?
Right.
Because Ford has several plants, one of which is getting ready to close.
They're closing
in
a lot
Mexico.
Of plants. Right. And I got, but see, a lot of these auto workers union guys write me, and they're like, buy American cars. And then I get a lot of emails from people that are like, some people said the Ford Focus is good. I looked into a Focus before I bought the used Camry, and they were sort of unreliable. Some people are, here's a guy, Mark, here's an argument, one that the unions won't like. I bought American cars for years. I was determined to buy American to support the unions and to support the manufacturing economy, but I had to stop. I'm not rich, and I was paying dearly for buying American cars. While my friends' Toyotas and Hondas were still running well over 150,000 miles, like the Honda I had and this Toyota I had, mine died under 100,000 miles, a couple of them with only about 60,000 miles on them. Despite excellent maintenance, I'm now the proud owner of my second Honda. So a lot of times, these American cars, I don't know if it's planned obsolescence or why they're designed to not make it for the long haul, but I'm a guy, I like buying something once. I like buying something with integrity and with reliability that'll run for a long time.
Well, you know, I have a question about this, particularly, for example, when you look at Ford and GM.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't the union buy a controlling interest in each one of them as shareholders, given the fact that both of them are now being sold as junk stocks?
Well, I mean,
it's a
good question because, you know, when you look at the big three right now, last month's sales figures for the big three were Ford at an 18% drop, GM at an 11.3% drop, Daimler Chrysler at a 7% drop, Toyota a 9.3%
increase.
And that's because the cars are good cars. Now, I don't want to begrudge these union guys anything because they work for companies that are, first of all, Ford just announced that they're going to be firing 30,000 people before 2008, and they're going to close 12 assembly facilities. One in Atlanta, St. Louis, St. Paul, Minnesota, one in Michigan, and the one in Mexico you were just talking about.
Not the only one in Mexico, though.
Right. And now, of course, the company and industry analysts are going to cite the health care costs, raw material decline in the U.S. market share. But the bottom line is these companies aren't structured properly. I don't know who got, you know, I don't know the nuances of what's going on with the union, but clearly these executives that run these companies are making decisions that don't honor the unions and don't make plans to make decent cars that are reliable and last a long time.
I don't understand. You know, every piece I read about the auto industry in this country, particularly the big three, they talk about the fact that the unions are getting over generous benefits. Now, I don't understand. I don't see union guys, retired UAW guys, you know, living la vida loca or anything. I don't see these people buying mansions. I don't see these people. And it's amazing to me that they will put, the health and welfare of a car company on the health benefits or benefits that are given to auto workers, and they never talk about how corporate America, and particularly corporate titans who take humongous bonuses right around this time of year, how come that doesn't impact anybody's bottom line? How come that's not a problem?
Yeah, it should be a problem. But, I mean, here I'm just a guy who's bought nothing but used cars all of my life.
And now you're going for the newie.
Well, I want a new car, and I need a car because my wife sold my old Honda while I was gone.
Hi, honey. I sold the car.
I sold your car. No, we talked about it. It had problems. And the guy across the street who drives a truck for a living needs to drive the car to where he picks up his truck, right?
Yeah.
So because of the gas prices, he didn't care that the Honda's trunk leaked and it had 160-some-odd thousand miles on it. He just wanted the gas mileage so he could drive to work and save some dough. Well, I don't know what to do. I mean, I'd like to hear from some union guys who tell me that who can honestly tell me that the product that they're executives and the manufacturing plan, the people that run their company, is creating a great, reliable product. I'd like to hear that.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know several people who swear by Saturns, for example. One of my best friends has bought nothing but Saturns since the Saturn came out and loves the car.
Now, isn't that one of those sort of semi-socialist, beautiful work environments where everyone's a family and everyone gets health care and you get your own car and everyone's smiling and singing at the plant, or is that just a commercial?
That's probably just a commercial, but it's an American car.
Okay.
You know, it is a U.S.-made car. It's not particularly expensive. I mean, the Saturn's, I think the top one probably doesn't run more than $25,000. So, I mean, it's, you know, supposedly a good utilitarian car. Now, I don't know. I didn't get one. I tend to go with, I do a lot of research before I buy a car. And I don't know whether, you know, a lot of these consumer magazines and such are good, bad, or indifferent. All I know is when you look at road reliability, the Japanese cars, not just foreign cars, the Japanese these cars usually rise to the top.
And that's what the bottom line is, when the tire hits the pavement. How's the old saying?
When the rubber meets the road.
When the rubber meets the road. Well, and also there's the question of buying American. Do you buy American because you see America as a charity case, or do you buy American because you believe in the product? I'm not diminishing anybody's. Obviously, I'm not promoting. I'm really not trying to promote anything. I'm just trying to buy a car that's going to last me a good few years. And there's another argument that if you're going to buy American, shouldn't you do that across the board?
That's the big issue.
Can you do it across the board?
How many auto workers are wearing Chinese sweaters?
Yeah, how much of this stuff, how many of the parts of Ford engines are from China? I mean, it really becomes about honoring the workers. This is what this is really about, because there's no indication that the American car makers are making cars that can compete with some of these Japanese cars, but it's honoring the workers and making sure the workers get a fair shake and are treated decently. I mean, that's what this is really about. How do we make that happen, given that the manufacturers are not turning out good products, and that's not their fault. It's not the workers' fault. 866-303-2270. If you want to chime in on this, 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Call us at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270.
Call me, doggy.
Fifty past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, taking calls about cars and what the right thing to do is in terms of buying American or buying reliability. I mean, when you're progressive, it becomes even more complicated. I'm Mark Maron, by the way. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
If you're just meeting us. If you're progressive, it's even more complicated. I got an email from a guy yesterday that said, don't buy Ford. They have homophobic hiring practices. Throw that into the mix.
Yeah.
Okay? Throw that into the mix. Let's do this news because it's just breaking and it's important. It's off subject and it's horrendous, but we're going to get to your calls in just a second. You want to do it, Riley?
Yeah. Two female suicide bombers have attacked a police academy in Baghdad, killed at least 27 police officers and academy students, wounded 32 other people. Took place about 12:45 p.m. local time in Baghdad. Women and there were two of them, each wearing a suicide vest, walked into a classroom, detonated the vest.
Jesus, that's just awful. It's just awful. Wow, how do you transition from that? Why don't we try this?
I guess Donald Rumsfeld said we shouldn't really report that because it's bad news from Iraq.
But not only is it bad news, but it shouldn't be any indication that it's going badly.
Badly.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. President Bush, in a speech yesterday, told Americans that the economy is much better than they think it is. Bush plans to show that with some economic indicators up. It's irrelevant if you yourself have no job and have to sell crack. Wow. Unfortunately, the president's upbeat speech about the economy wasn't seen in parts of New Orleans that are still without TV, electricity, houses, or people. A Chicago man is suing Microsoft over the new Xbox 360, saying it has design flaws that make it overheat and crash. Robert Byers, a Chicago man who bought Microsoft Corp's Xbox 360, has sued Microsoft, saying the new video game console overheats and freezes up. The designers of the Xbox responded to the suit, saying, quote, "It's true the Xbox does have one design flaw, and that is if you play it 24 hours a day, day after day after day, it might have a tendency to overheat occasionally. That's why we put an off switch on it. That way you can keep it from overheating, is to shut it off occasionally and go outside, you loser, get a life." The complaint is part of a proposed class action suit. Unfortunately, the classes mentioned were evil paladins, rune casters, and frost giants. <Come on. laughs> A cafe in Chicago posted a sign saying children of all ages should have to behave and use their indoor voices, which ignited debate over misbehaving kids in public places. Parents were upset by the sign. Many expressed their displeasure by throwing themselves onto the floor and screaming. The cafe's owner was unapologetic about the sign. He said, quote, "If I want customers who cry, throw up, and pee on themselves, I'll open a bar." End quote. All right, so those were funny. So let's take some calls about these cars because it's, you know, it's pending in my brain. Someone brought up the fact that why aren't we talking about hybrids? I've talked about hybrids. My wife wants me to buy a hybrid.
Well, that was how this entire discussion got triggered in the first place when I recommended to you that you get a Honda, an Accord hybrid.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've talked about Accord hybrid. She wants to get a Toyota hybrid. They're kind of expensive, but in California, you get a couple of benefits. Get that carpool lane. You drive a lot in California. We got Ted. Hey, Ted, what's going on? What's you got some input here?
What's up, Ted?
Yeah, I got some info. The fact is that the union is there strictly to eliminate discrimination between employee and employer.
Mm-hmm.
They have many weights on their back that the other automobile makers don't. And I'm talking about Honda and Toyota and so on with pensions.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, if the car manufacturers do not make a car that people want to buy, that's the end of the story. That's called change. Live with it and adjust.
Are you in the union, Ted?
All my life.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, thanks for your input.
Thanks,
it's important.
Ted.
Thanks a lot. Now, that is interesting because that is what we were saying, that the onus is on the manufacturers. It's not on these guys.
No.
And they understand the racket, and that guy is a fairly clear understanding what the union is supposed to do. And also, what we are getting, I got a little flack yesterday that, you know, the idea was that, hey, look, you know, get on board, man. Unions support Democrats, and you are being, you know, you're going against the grain here. Well, the bottom line is, the last I checked, Air America was not a propaganda outlet for the Democratic Party, not yet.
No.
And the bottom line is we're trying to be objective here and try to, you know, be truthful. And I'm just expressing, you know, where I'm at with this thing. George in Brooklyn, what's on your mind, buddy?
What's up, George?
Good morning.
Hi.
I am a union member, so I understand that whole thing. But I feel like if we're at war, one of the reasons we're at war is because of our dependency on foreign oil. You should most definitely be looking at hybrids. And if you have to go to a hybrid, definitely check out the Prius. And if not, call your friend Willie Nelson and find out more about the biodiesel cars.
Okay, I'll call Willie Nelson. That's the one.
Mary's got it.
George, is that your name, George?
That's right.
Oh, that's a nice name. Was it always George?
It's actually a nickname I've had all my life.
Well, thanks for calling, George.
Thank you.
I'm looking into one of those cars where you can just get that vest where you interface your own fat with the car and it runs on your own fat. Those biodiesel cars are sounding good, but they don't seem that very practical. I mean, some of those cats are still driving around the back of restaurants and converting, thrown out grease into, I'd like to do that. I might have the time. Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Beryl in Staten Island, what's on your mind?
Hey, Beryl.
Hi. I called to say that I have a Saturn that I purchased in 1995.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, 80,000 miles. It's still in excellent condition. So that is an American alternative. But I would do a lot of research before I bought it because it has been 10 years, and I think the company has changed quite a bit from when I bought it.
Did you ever go to any of those Saturn parties where everyone has a picnic and hangs out?
No, I didn't, but this is odd for me. I thought about it.
Hey, Beryl, I got a question for you.
Well, let me just say a couple more things. You when I bought the Saturn, you really do buy into a spirit, and it had a great spirit back then. I'm not sure it still does.
Mm.
And the other thing I wanted to say is that were I buying a car today, which thank God I don't have to because my Saturn is still running great, I would really research and I would buy what is going to serve me and what is going to last a long time and what is going to have fuel economy. I don't care where it's made, and I think that's the way you serve
America. Those are the important things.
Quick question, Beryl. How's the air conditioning working on that car?
Oh, great.
It is great. Okay, just
okay.
Curious.
Thanks a lot for your call, Beryl. Thanks for all your calls. I guess what are we gonna continue when we come back? We've got the Liberal Confessional coming up. So that's always interesting. You can call and confess. So get ready for that. Let's clear the slate. Appreciate all your calls. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition in its last legs. This is nine more shows, including this one, to go, my friends. I want to thank Jill from BrilliantAtBreakfast.com for the cookies last week. Those were nice. I enjoyed them. We passed them out. You missed it, Riley. You missed cookies. That's right.
Cookies.
That's right, old man. You missed the cookies.
Let me call my agent.
The Blondie bars were excellent. Charlie and Jennifer, thank you for the most amazing gift bags I've ever seen in my life. Italian chocolate, peanut brittle, mustard, there's asparagus spears. Man, it was huge. I know it must have cost you, and believe me, it's definitely appreciated.
Much
very
appreciated.
Sweet. Thanks for all the letters and cards and T-shirts and stuff. You know, we were just talking about me buying a car, and some guy, this is the second guy that sort of accused me of this a little bit before we get into the news quickly, is that I haven't done my research and that I'm buying the right-wing line against the unions. I'm not against the unions. I'm not against the unions at all. I made no indication that union guys are lazy or anything like that. I just want to buy a good car.
What is the right wing line against the unions?
That they're bloated and that they don't really honor what they were put in place to do, and that the union guys are lazy and they're getting a free ride. That's the right wing's line on cars.
Yeah, but you never said anything about that.
No, I know. And I, you know, to believe me, the guy accused me of not doing research. I didn't. I mean, that is true. I'm just trying to buy a car. I'm just a guy.
Yeah, well, you don't have the car yet. If
I know.
You bought the car and didn't do the research, that's one thing.
I just wanted to talk to some people about it. Sad things in Baghdad. Two female suicide bombers attacked the police academy in East Baghdad today that killed 27 people. These are women. Two women walked in wearing a suicide vest. This is a new and it's not that new an approach, but it seems to be happening more, Riley, with female suicide bombers.
It is. It is more and more frequent, and you see that the targeting remains more or less the same, Mark. They are hitting these places, whether they are recruiting stations or places where Iraqi law enforcement is being trained.
It's unbelievable that yesterday Donald Rumsfeld said, quote, "We need to stop defining success in Iraq as the absence of terror attacks." End quote. You know, with this kind of stuff happening, this is 27 Iraqi police trainees.
Yes.
People who are, if you can't look at this as a significant enemy and trivialize it just as a terrorist attack, which you can't see it that way as well, but this is the enemy there. This is the people the Americans are fighting. And for him to trivialize it is ridiculous.
Well, see, the problem is Donald Rumsfeld makes the same mistake a lot of people do, and that is separating American casualties from Iraqi casualties.
Mm-hmm.
If 27 Americans had been killed anywhere in Iraq, it would be a major, major issue. Donald Rumsfeld knows that as long as it's Iraqis that are dying, Americans get desensitized.
And I'll tell you, you know, we shouldn't be there either way. This is going to go on whether we're there or not, and that's just the truth of the matter. The deployment should start now. Now, what I want to talk about quickly, Riley, if we got a time, we got to do a liberal confessional in just a second, but we were talking a little bit about Saddam Hussein, you know, fighting till the end there, standing up, taking charge of that court and saying, you know, you guys are fraudulent, this is illegitimate, and, you know, basically I'm the president, this is an occupation. He knows he's going down, but you got to hand it to the guy for standing up for himself.
And I've been wrestling with this. I don't want to do my own personal confessional here, but I've been wrestling with why is Saddam such a compelling figure to me at this trial, and suddenly it hit me. This reminds me of the Chicago 7 trial, mm-hmm. which took place when I was a kid in 1968, when there were people on trial including Bobby Seale and Abby Hoffman and all those people, and they did more or less the same kind of thing. Now, in an American courtroom, the judge in that case just gagged them. But obviously they can't gag Saddam, so he is trying to conduct that trial much in the way Bobby Seale and Abby Hoffman and all those people did back in the day.
Yeah, you know the guy's going down. He knows he's going down, but he's not going down without a fight. And they're giving him airtime around the world. It's not always easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, look, you know, I've been trying to save some money, okay? Because you never know what's going to happen. And instead of putting it in the bank, I gave it to a family friend who's a broker.
There's nothing wrong so far.
So, okay, well, one of the companies that she put the money in was a cement company.
Well, that's still no sin. The world needs cement.
Okay, but then I get this call from her. She was excited, but a little sad. She says, Mark, I know this says bad, but the cement stock went way, the cement stock did very well after the hurricane.
Okay, let me guess. The stock shot up a bit, huh?
Yes. Yes, it's awful, right? But it's good for me, I guess, but it's bad for the people that live there. I mean, real bad. Or maybe, wait, maybe it's good that they're getting cement. I mean, I'm glad to be making money on a small investment, but not at the expense of people getting hurt and cities dying. I mean, maybe I'm helping. I don't know, man. It's just creepy and it feels wrong.
It's an unfortunate sequence of events, Mark, but you had no way of knowing.
I know, but I feel like a vulture, a parasite. I feel Republican even. It's like I invested in body bags or embalming fluid or something like that.
You can't be responsible for every dollar after it leaves your wallet, Mark. Once it leaves, it takes on a life of its own.
I guess.
And didn't you give money to that that money to your broker friend and say, here, put this in a cement company because I'm pretty sure there's going to be a devastating hurricane soon?
No.
Did you do that?
No, I didn't do that. No, I didn't. If I could be, honestly, if I could predict the future like that, I wouldn't give money to a broker. I'd pick a lotto number, win, and then I'd buy myself an island.
Well, since you can't predict the future as your penance, write out a check to the Red Cross to help those people out who've been hit by Katrina.
Okay, Brother Riley, I'm going to do that. I really am going to do that. And speaking of the future, who am I going to confess to when all this is over?
I hear cats are very patient and understanding. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Brother Riley. Now, if anyone else out there wants to confess their evil sins and seek absolution, our confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-323-8663-303-2270, 866-303-2270. It's interesting because I did have that moment. It's still kind of a weird thing in my head where, they need cement. I didn't know it. But anyways, give us a call with your sins. It's 12 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Call us at 866.
That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow. Yes. Yes. I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah. Drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay. Well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, 17 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're going to take your confessions here, 866-303-2270. But before we get into those, I'm Mark Maron, by the way. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Thanks for listening. This is the ninth to the last show of Morning Sedition. I'm very excited. Our guest in a few minutes is going to be Chris Hedges, author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning and Losing Moses on the Highway, The Ten Commandments in America, to talk about the oncoming theocracy in the Christian fascist movement. You know who you are. I'm not talking about all of you. Don't get all crazy out there. I'm not knocking Christians. There's just some problems that have to be addressed, and Chris has got some info that it's very interesting and enlightening stuff, and Chris knows his stuff. He was brought up in the church. Let me just say hi to Jenna. Jenna is in Minnesota. She's in the hospital. She's a fan of the show. She's listening on the phone because I have a radio there, and I felt bad. Jenna, you didn't move to the lobby of the hospital because I made you feel bad, did you?
Oh, I didn't want to wake up my roommate.
You didn't want to what?
Wake up my roommate.
Oh, wake up your roommate. So now you got a roommate.
Yeah.
Do you like her?
Huh?
Do you like her?
Yeah. Now she's telling me what to tell you.
Oh.
She's very nice. She's a very nice lady.
Did she just tell you to tell me that she's a very nice lady?
Yeah, well, she's listening now because I moved back.
Okay.
In my room.
Oh, okay.
She has really good taste in television, so she watched all the right programs last night.
Okay.
On CNN,
Yeah, to learn what was going on.
Yeah.
All right, we sound better. I just want to make sure you're okay. I got to take some confessions. Okay, good.
Oh,
all right.
I want to comment on everything.
All right, well, we'll call you later. We'll talk to you later. All right? Okay, good. Kirby. Kirby, how are you in Rockford, Illinois? What's your sin this morning, Kirby?
What's up, Kirby?
Well, I've only called into two talk shows in the past. One of them is Morning Sedition. And the other one is Unfiltered.
Oh, no. So you think you had something to do with this?
Yeah, I feel like it.
Uh-oh.
Well, look, so now what are you thinking?
I'm thinking of calling Springer.
Do me a favor first. All right, here's your penance. First, call Sean Hannity. Call Rush Limbaugh. Call until you get through.
Bill Riley, too.
Yeah, that would really help the cause, okay?
Well, I would, but I can't even listen to them.
Well, the thing is I know you can't listen to them. That's why it's a penance. I mean, you're seeing yourself as sort of the death toll of radio shows, and I think that even though you can't listen to them, your penance is going to be to try to get through to spread your certain magic to those shows. And then if you want to call Springer, it's up to you.
Well.
It's penance is hard. It's hard, Kirby. But I mean, you have this special gift,
yeah.
And you didn't realize it until now. Thanks a lot.
Well, I believe me, if I had known it, I would have been calling Limbaugh a long time ago.
All right. Well, now we know that you have the special gift of getting radio shows canceled. So now you know what work is ahead of you, Kirby.
All right.
And again, thanks to you, I'm not going to be on the air in a week. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Talk to you later.
Take care there, Grim Reaper.
Poor guy.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Hell of a confession.
All right, Melanie in New York City. Is this Melanie, Melanie?
Yeah, it's Melanie, Melanie.
All right. Hey, Melanie, Melanie.
How are you?
Oh, I'm well, except that, you know, I'm going to miss you, and I'm very sad about that.
I'm sad, too, and I'm going to miss seeing you at the live shows. It's Kirby's fault, the guy who just called.
Yeah, apparently I heard him.
Got some bad mojo. So what's your confession?
Well, you know, speaking of Christians, I came into work yesterday, and my work area, which is kind of, I've been relocated, and we have a small music department, and it's filled with ribbon, big red ribbons and tinsel and all kinds of stuff, and these little stockings with our names on it right by where I work.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I found one of the few Jews who worked there, and I said, look at this. And I went back and took the stocking down because, you know, I've never celebrated anything like that, and I'm not religious, and I'm Jewish, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I'm sitting there at 3:00 in the afternoon listening to Randy, and I hear with my headphones on, and I keep hearing, Melanie, Melanie. So I turn around, and there are like four people of my coworkers standing there, and they're going, where's your stocking?
Yeah, they're saying, Jew!
Exactly!
Jew! Yeah,
so I put it, I hadn't thrown it out.
Yeah.
So I put it in the drawer. Meanwhile, I'm like turning bright red. And I'm like, well, you know, but the worst part of it is that I put it back up after that.
Oh my God.
Isn't that terrible?
You buckled? You surrendered?
Yeah, kind of, because I felt really bad. You know, somebody's gone to the effort of putting it up and, you know, and was just trying to be nice and
well, you know what your penance is.
Wait. But now I feel like I should just walk in with the big yellow star today, you know, on my clothes.
Oh, my God. Well, on some level, you're going to have to do that because your penance is like, I don't know how Jewy you are in general.
Well, I'm not at all observant in any way. But, you know, I lived in Israel, and it was very cool to celebrate Christmas there because there wasn't any.
Right.
I loved it.
So I guess that you're going to have to act a little Jewy now. You're going to have to, you know, get some Hanukkah gilt and a plastic dreidel and go stick it in their stocking.
Hey, I got another penance for you.
My coworker said, oh, I'll give you some. I'll put some Hanukkah gilt in your stocking.
Hey, Melanie, I got a great one for you.
What?
Sue your coworkers for creating a hostile work environment.
That will get me really far. And I thought I could call the ADL or the ACLU or, you know.
Well, you know, it's weird because it's one of those situations where it's mildly offensive just because we're Jewish, but ultimately it's not that offensive, and the only real remedy of it is for us to act more Jewish than we really are.
Yeah.
No, the remedy is to tell people it's offensive. I don't think most Christians, believe that that's offensive to Jews. And if it is, we need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mark, because that's kind of what my boss was saying. Well, you know, he didn't know whether somebody would be offended, and it wasn't very ecumenical. And, of course, that's the part that's upsetting me is that I wasn't more forceful in just saying, yeah, I do find it offensive. Do I have your permission to take the stocking down when I get to work today?
Absolutely.
You have to take the stocking down, and then you have to put Hanukkah gilt and a plastic dreidel in each one.
Light it up like a little plastic menorah.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then, like, the next time you're jamming with these people on your cello, you got to break into Hanukkah songs.
There you go.
I was playing a Pops concert this weekend, and we do this armed forces salute.
Uh-huh.
So I turned to the person that I didn't know who was sitting next to me right before we started, and I said, this is really nauseating.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
That's another confession.
I will have to save that one. All right, Melanie. Thank you.
Take care, Melanie. Have a good one.
Guys.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, we talked about that last week when you were gone. I find that tackiness and the sort of overwhelming elements of the Christmas season annoying. But on a religious level, I'm not that offended by Christmas trees because, you know, my wife isn't Jewish and there's one in my house.
Well, they smell good and all that. My younger brother does not celebrate any holiday.
That's the way to go.
Not his birthday, not Thanksgiving, not Christmas.
That's crazy.
Not the 4th of July. And see, the ultimate test of whether people celebrate holidays is where they go to work.
Yeah.
And my brother goes to work every day.
Well, that, you know what? That's honorable and everything, but I mean, the bottom line, Riley, the one great thing about holidays is food, presents, and no work.
He's a vegetarian, so he doesn't eat most of the food that people make on holidays.
Yeah.
And, you know, for him, it's an easy way to say, look, I'm just not buying into any of this.
That's good, man. That's noble. And I think I don't have the strength. Steve in Jacksonville, Florida, what's your confession quickly?
Good morning, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Steve.
I'm feeling bad. Sunday night I was fully involved in watching West Wing and just having this fantasy about the good guys being in charge. And I saw my caller ID light up, and it was the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer the phone. CJ Craig character was on Allison Janney, and I was even having that kind of fantasy too.
Oh, so you had a lot of things going on, but
yeah, and I didn't answer. I know they needed me, and I didn't answer.
But part of you felt like you were doing the right thing because you were watching West Wing, right?
Well, probably not.
Well, guess what? Here's your penance. You have to begin the momentum to elect Martin Sheen for president.
There you go.
In 2008.
I'm going to find a bumper sticker with that.
All right, man. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Take it easy. I get a lot of mail from the DNC. I mean, at what point, let's be honest, we're confessing things. Do you ever, like, when you get that kind of stuff and when you see people asking for money and stuff, don't you feel that by virtue of what we do every morning that we're kind of like, you know, I'm covering it. Don't worry. When people come and can I have some money for this? Like, you know, I'm doing a lot.
I give to some very specific organizations and charities and, you know, having been burned by people cold calling in the past, mm-hmm. you know, saying that they were with somebody when they really were not,
mm-hmm.
Caller ID kind of helps because you can actually nail down where they say they're calling from. But I always get calls from cops. You know, if I'm calling from on behalf of the
Police Athletic League.
No, the Fraternal Order of Police.
Oh, those I used to get those all the time. I'll give money to people, but I'm not consistent about it.
Not me neither.
I need some. We got to talk about what charities I need to give to because I have to ease some of my burden. So look, when we come back, we are going to talk about some heavy stuff in terms of Christian fascism in this country with Chris Hedges. It's 27 past the hour. Not all Christians. Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly.
I've been really trying, baby.
And I'm looking at this and I'm going, if I have to go down, I'm willing to do it. Now just think about that. They want $60 million. Punish me. O'Reilly did X, Y, and Z. The papers love that. I gotta say, this is the worst day of my life. Punish me. Punish me. Now just think about that. If I have to go down, I'm willing to do it. Punish me. Enough.
That'll be in his next fantasy book.
I want to read some of the quotes from the court transcript. Some improvisational O'Reilly for you. Well, if I took you down there, then I'd want to take a shower with you right away, and that would be the first thing I'd do. Yeah, we'd check into the room, and we would order up some room service, and I'd definitely get two wines into you as quickly as I could. And, you know, get them into you. You know, I would get them into you, maybe intravenously let those glasses of wine into you, because I need you to be wasted for me to feel like a man. I added that part. All right. Okay, you'd basically be in the shower, and then I would come in, and I'd join you, and you would have your back to me because I'm so ashamed of me. I added that part. I just don't want you to see me. And I would take that little loofah thing and kind of soap up your back and rub it all over, you know, get you to relax, hot water, and, you'd feel the tension drain out of you, and you'd still be, with your back to me, and I would kind of put my arm, and it's one of those mitts, you know, those loofah mitts. Yeah, baby. How's that sound to you, to have a loofah mitt rubbed on you? Huh? How about an oven mitt? Or maybe some work gloves. What do you think of work gloves? Maybe, you know, the leather ones? Because when they get wet, they've got to feel kind of good, right? Leather gloves, a loofah mitt. I don't know, man. But I know one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to massage your boobs and get your nipples really hard because I like that. And you have spectacular boobs. Did I mention that? You have spectacular boobs for loofah mitting. That's all I'm saying. All right? I'm adding stuff here. I hope you don't mind. I'm adding things. But here's where it gets really good, all right? When he says, then I would take the other hand, okay? I would take the other hand with the falafel thing. You know, I got a loofah mitt, got some work gloves, and I got some falafel balls, and maybe some lamb kibbe. Can I get some lamb kibbe and some baba ganoush? Because I'm going to work that stuff right up into your... That's where I'm coming from, you know, because, you know, I want you to be Arab for me, baby. Can you do that? Can you do that? But keep your back to me because I'm a coward and a pervert. I added a lot of stuff.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, 37 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
Chris Hedges will be here in just a little while. And I just want to say before I bring on our next guest, I'm going to be stopping by to a TV taping of Greg Giraldo's show tomorrow. Greg's got a new show on Comedy Central called Friday Nights with Greg Giraldo. It's a Comedy Central show, and Comedy Central has given us some pairs of tickets to give away. The taping is tomorrow at 6 o'clock on East 44th Street in Manhattan. We'll give a pair of tickets to the first five callers. Right now. So if you ever wanted to see a live TV taping, now's your chance. 866-303-2270. Speaking of comics, in the studio right now, fresh off the plane from Las Vegas, is a regular on Comedy Central. We used to do Tough Crowd together all the time. He's also does a regular column in the Advocate, Friend or Foe, by Jim David. Jim David is in the studio with
us
right now.
How are you guys? I'm glad to be here in the home stretch.
Good to see you again.
It's really good to see you.
Friend of the show, Jim David. I got some good pictures of us, buddy, from the Strand bookstore of me, you, and Eric Bogosian.
Oh, man, I'd love to see those.
I got to send them to you. I have them at home. Maybe we could put them online. You know, if we were a responsible show, Jim, in the way that we'd have pictures of everybody online, but it takes so much effort and concentration just to put our show together.
I expected some pictures on the wall out in the hallway,
okay,
you know.
Brendan McDonald, which I knew as I was saying responsible, was going to be like, who the hell is he talking about? I got into my head and said, yes, they are on the site, so you can go see those on the site.
Oh, they are on the site.
Yeah. Maybe I should go to my site occasionally before I stop saying bad things about the show. I feel bad. We're a very responsible show. How you doing, man?
I'm great. I bring a present for you from a listener in Asheville, North Carolina.
Uh-huh. Hey, I was there last month.
You were?
No, October, yeah, at the end of October.
Well, that's where I'm from. I'm from Asheville, North Carolina, originally.
I hear it's a hip place.
It is.
It's a very hip place.
It's become like Austin, Texas. It's like a blue city surrounded by red.
So where's my present?
You know, it's right here.
Okay.
How
about my present?
This is from my cousins, Jim and Nancy. And Jim is a very talented musician. He has a band called Junior James and the Late Guitar, and Nancy produced it. And Nancy wants to have your baby.
Really? Uh-oh.
She wants to bear your children.
That's interesting because I'm not
and
sure
she's,
my
she's
not...
past childbearing age, but she's going to work it out.
Oh, because I'm not sure my wife wants to have my kids. So if I want to have kids, maybe I should get that out.
But they are rabid listeners of yours, and you're a big hit in Asheville, North Carolina.
Oh, well, that's great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Nancy.
When I told her that I was going to be on, she said, "Would you give him this, please? You mean you know?" Know him? You know, it's one of those. It's like, you mean you know him? Oh, my God.
Well, thank you so much.
And then she started twitching.
I'm glad I have that effect on people.
I like
when people twitch in front of me. Thank you so much, Nancy, and thank you, Jim, for bringing that. I like presents. We just got this. If you want some chocolate, dude, I can hook you up after this.
Oh, really?
We got one of those gift baskets, but it's not just a gift basket. Dude,
took a forklift to get it.
Yeah, really.
It came in a crate, man.
Really?
Yeah, we had these great listeners out there, and I actually don't know where they are, but the thanks goes out to Charlie and Jennifer for the amazing gift back. Well, let's talk to me about Vegas, man. So it's one of those places that I have not worked. My wife wants to go to Vegas badly.
You've never worked there?
I haven't been there in years, dude. I've never done stand-up in Vegas.
Wow.
And where were you at?
I was at the Comedy Stop at the Tropicana Hotel.
And it was good? You had a good time?
I love it. It's two shows a night, and I absolutely love
it. Do you get yourself into trouble in Vegas?
I used to. And see, this is what's interesting, is that I used to get into a lot of trouble right before the war when I was doing stuff. I did a joke about how Bush, really wanted to go and do the war so bad that, it's like he was, Daddy had a war, I want a war. You know, I want my own war. And then people would wait for me after the show, and they would say, what are you doing? We have to get the terrorists. And they would, you know, and like this one guy, this one rednecky guy in a baseball cap waited for me after the show one night and said, you were good till you put in that liberal crap at the end. Somebody's going to kick your butt, boy. I'm W.W. Johnson of Carson City, Nevada. You better watch yourself. And I didn't, you know, it was like all I could say was, sir, you have obviously misconstrued the ribald intent of my scathing satire. You know.
Don't carry a wrench or nothing.
Oh, well, but anyway, it was definite. And I always got into a little bit of trouble with the more political stuff that I did. Yeah. Never the gay stuff. Right. Never. They love that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think some of them are very surprised that you're admitting it publicly.
But they've never seen that before.
Exactly.
They're like...
They don't know what to do. They're like...
Yeah, they're like, oh, my God. It's almost like I pull my pants down, and they're just so appalled and surprised that somebody's actually done this.
Well, I think it takes a lot of courage in the eyes of those people, and they can even respect that.
I think so. Yeah. I think maybe so.
So now you're finding that the audience, in terms of in political material, because I've noticed this as well, you don't get any, when you start making fun of Bush and the administration, you get a little of that now.
Listen,
as opposed
now,
to, shut up, man.
Yeah, exactly. Now there are no boos.
Yeah.
None. And I mean, like, I was pretty severe in my jokes.
It's
like, you know.
I know your stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it was not exactly, there was sort of no doubt as to where I was coming from.
Right.
And I mean, you know, I pay lip service to being bipartisan. You know, I have to do something.
Right.
And I make some Kerry jokes and some Nancy Pelosi jokes, you know, like, you know.
But I found that, you know, when you are, you know, scathingly critical, I think that obviously, according to all the polls, I mean, the country is with us now.
Well,
depending on,
yes,
not
exactly
on everything, you know, they're not going to agree with everything, but I mean, they understand that something is horrendously wrong.
Well, there are still some people out there, though, who do support him. You know, it's almost like he has this Obi-Wan kind of power to be able to go, these aren't the droids you're looking for. You can go about your business. Move along.
So now, can we talk about gay marriage? Do you talk about that in your act?
Yeah.
I mean, because I know that Elton John is going to get married, and apparently England is going to allow it. Now, are we going to be the last country on this planet to honor our gay citizens with the opportunity?
I think probably, yeah. In this lifetime, probably.
Do you have any desire to get married?
Sure. I mean, I want the rights. I don't care if they call it marriage. I don't care if they call it spelunking. You know? I don't care if they call it wahaga.
Yeah.
You know, I just want the same rights. That's all.
To get that's covered, the health rights, the insurance rights.
It's
the
all about
rights.
The money. It's all about the cash. But, you know, it's like, I mean, it's sometimes I wonder, it's like I had no idea that my personal life is so controversial. I mean, we have the most boring life, you know. We get up in the morning. We,
wow.
We have cocktails.
Wow.
And then we do brunch. And then we go to schools and recruit. And then we plot the destruction of the traditional family for about 2 hours. And then we have happy hour. And then we do drugs and go dancing. And then when the crystal meth wears off, we call it an early night.
Uh-oh.
2 days later. And so I don't see what the problem really is.
Uh-oh.
We're talking to comedian Jim David. Yeah, I can't see the problem there. I don't understand what they're all freaked out about.
Well, no, they're very... It's really interesting. Sex in this country really freaks people out because, like, you know, I was just in Alabama this year. I performed at Birmingham, Alabama Gay Pride.
Really?
Birmingham, Alabama.
How many people were there?
About 2,000.
Wow,
it was
that's
a big.
That's
they had they, the funniest thing was they had a reunion of every drag queen that they've ever had from the past in the last 20 years, and from every bar, you know what I mean?
These
small towns have, all these gay bars in small towns have drag queens.
All have a Barbra Streisand.
They all have, well, no, it's not even that. It's like Cooksy Delight or Myrtle Beach.
Oh, made up.
Made up drag names. Myrtle Beach. I love that one.
That's a good one.
Right? But they would say, would you please, and I had to follow these drag queens. You know, they'd say, would you please welcome Miss Club Phoenix of 1982, everybody?
Yeah.
And then comes on with the walker. I was talking to...
The blue rig.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was talking to the guy who's the head of the Alabama AIDS Action Council, and I said, there's AIDS in Alabama? And he said, you have no idea. Because of abstinence only. Because the abstinence-only education, and they don't want to... See, what they're trying to teach down there is sex is the most horrifying, vile, nasty thing you can possibly do, and you should save it for someone you love.
Right, and that, of course, they...
Wow. Isn't that what they teach in the church? No.
Yeah, right.
Well, they make it scary, so when you finally do it, it's horrible, and then...
People around the country don't like to talk about sex still. It embarrasses them.
And what you're saying is because of that, they will go out and do it in the worst way. They will will not protect themselves because they're already ashamed of it. And it's
they don't know what to do.
So it's 45 past the hour. Why don't you stay with us? We'll find out what you got going on now. We'll talk a little bit about the Advocate and your what is this, weekly or monthly?
It's biweekly.
It's every biweekly.
Biweekly.
Yeah, you can go there. All right, if go I can ahead. Go there. I will when I come back.
Yeah.
46 past the hour with Jim David, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hey, this is Rob Zombie, and it says here, when I'm watching the sunrise after a long night of waking the dead and toasting nachos in the microwave, I listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, hi. Is this the CIA?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I'm Mark Maron. I'm calling from Air America. I just wanted to make sure that you guys knew that there was a group, an anti-American group, meeting at the Washington Marriott tomorrow. Are you familiar with the JCCR?
You don't need to call us, sir. You should call the FBI. They're the ones that deal with domestic issues.
The FBI, do you have a number?
No, I do not have, but they have an Office of Public Affairs.
You don't have a number for the FBI?
No, I do not have a number for the FBI.
This is the CIA, right?
Correct.
Oh, I thought you guys were communicating better now.
You just need to dial the Office of Public Affairs. I don't have the number in front of me.
That's weird. Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Good morning, FBI Washington Field.
Yeah, hi. I just was trying to report a anti-American organization.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
You're going to take care of it?
Yeah.
Oh, do I need to call the CIA?
If you want, you can. I can connect you to CIA.
You can connect me right over to the CIA?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that'd be excellent. Because you know what? Can I just tell you? I called someone over there earlier to get your number, and they didn't even have it.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Okay, hold on, okay?
All right. She's just going to transfer me over there. They're going to take action. This is great. Hi, my name is Mark Maron. I'm calling from Air America because I called you guys earlier about this problem I'm having. And when I called earlier, someone over at your office said to call the FBI, and I asked if you guys had the number, and you didn't. And I just called the FBI, and they just connected me right to you guys. I just thought I'd let you know you guys should get that going both ways because you're supposed to be talking to each other a little better now. Okay, thanks.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Well, it's 52 past the hour. I'm here with Jim David and Mark Riley. What did that stand for again? What was that crazy, that judicial, do you remember the JCCCR?
Judeo-Christian Constitutional.
It was a Judeo-Christian.
It was Justice Sunday.
Justice Sunday. I remember that. I couldn't ever remember exactly what it stood for. But we're going to talk to Chris Hedges in a few minutes, a little later in the show, about some of the repercussions of that and the still insidious organization of ultra right wing Christians infiltrating the government to make a theocracy. I'm looking forward to that conversation. But in a minute, we're going to finish our conversation with Jim David. But I want to tell you guys about something I'm doing. Greg Giraldo, who's a friend of Jim and I's, we used to do Tough Crowd with him a lot. We came up with him here at the clubs in New York
City.
That's
right.
Hosts you Friday nights on Comedy Central, and the taping is tomorrow, and apparently I'm going to be a guest. I got to figure out what I'm going to do, but I'm going to be a guest, and now I don't know whether I should shave or look decent or what.
Stay the way you are.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. we're going to be giving away tickets to the taping. It's tomorrow at 6 o'clock on East 44th Street in Manhattan. We'll give a pair of tickets to the first 5 callers right now. So if you ever wanted to go to a live TV taping, here's your chance. 866-303-2270.
First live taping I ever went to was the Jeffersons.
Oh,
in
wow.
LA.
Really?
And yeah, I was in LA and I was visiting I was visiting graduate school. I was thinking of going to UCLA graduate school in directing theater. Uh-huh.
So you went to the thing.
And I wanted to go to a TV taping, so what they had was the Jeffersons. And I went, and I thought it was the worst. I couldn't believe it was. First of all, it was a badly written episode that I was watching.
Uh-huh.
But every single moment, the actors would pause for the laugh. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Insert laugh here. Wah, 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 wah. And it was just awful.
It's a, well, I'm just glad that you're making people really want to go.
Yeah. there's a difference between that and Comedy Central.
Well, but what you're saying is true. A TV taping is a lot of waiting.
Yeah.
And if you don't go anticipating the experience of being at a TV taping and being sort of coerced into laughing and applause signs and
right.
people doing retakes, and sometimes you can stay there forever.
Yeah, but that's the difference between seeing a Comedy Central taping and a sitcom taping, uh-huh. is because a sitcom taping is all fake.
Well, you know what? It's interesting.
You know, and Comedy Central taping, like on Greg's show, which is an interview show,
yeah.
and Tough Crowd, which it was, so there's a chance to be spontaneous and actually something can happen.
Oh, yeah, and you hated when they'd have to redo things because it's sort of it's never going to come back the way it just happened.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know how you feel about Louis C.K., but he's a good friend of mine.
I love him.
He's doing a show for HBO now.
Yeah.
It's a traditional sitcom. It's the first time HBO has done a three-camera sitcom with
right.
a live audience. But he actually, for the pilot, they just want the show to exist on its own. They want the laughs to be genuine. So they don't have a stage manager telling people when to laugh. They literally go out there, apparently. He told me on the pilot, anyways, that they sent the guy out there and said, look, you know, don't laugh unless it's funny to you. You know, we're not pressuring you to do any of that, and we don't want any fake laughter. Enjoy the show.
You got to be kidding.
No, and apparently the HBO guy came up to it and said, that's the worst warm-up guy we've got. We got a good new warm-up guy. but the idea is that is something you really haven't heard since the 70s. I mean, I watched the Dick Cavett shows. We had Dick on the show here, and he's got some of these DVDs out. And you watch TV at that era, you can tell they're not coached audiences because there's a human pace to it.
Well, not every moment has to be this golden moment.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
it's a human pace. That's a good way to put it.
So let's talk about The Advocate. You got a biweekly column in here. Tell us about it because you only got about a minute left.
Well, I started writing for The Advocate last year, these, opinion pieces.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do a feature sort of like the conventional wisdom in Newsweek.
Right.
And so we came up with Friend or Foe, which is who has been a friend and who's been a foe to the gay community.
And this week was Antonio Villaraigosa.
Villaraigosa.
Who we've interviewed. He was the friend. The L.A. mayor.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Yeah, because he says that he's going to support gay marriage.
And Patricia Miller, who is, who is she?
She's the governor of some state, I think. I don't know. I wrote
she's
it.
She's the Indiana state senator. We should
and
all
she's
know
the senator.
That.
She's something.
So, well, she's a state senator. It's
state
a,
senator.
You can forgive
somebody.
Us for not knowing a state senator. Yeah, for supporting legislation that would prohibit gays and lesbians from using medical science to assist in having a child.
Well, yeah, there's some people in Indiana that are trying to stop gays and lesbians from being able to use artificial insemination and stuff like that.
From having David Crosby's children?
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Where are you going to be working? Anywhere?
Huh?
Where are you working this week?
In New York City all week. In all month. All month of December.
Check
in New
website?
York City. Yep. JimDavid.com.
There you go. Thanks, Jim. It's great seeing you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, guys. 57 Past Air America. We're going to have Stephen Gagan, the director of Syriana, here in just a minute.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, lurking conservatives. How's everybody doing out there? We're having a pretty good show. A little later in the show, we're going to have Christopher Hedges is going to talk about the Christian fascist movement that is slowly infiltrating our country and government. We're going to talk to Stephen Kagan, the writer and director of Syriana, in just a few minutes. Let's do a little news over. First, Riley, do you get that story out of Baghdad about the suicide bombers?
27 dead, 32 wounded. Two female suicide bombers walked into a police academy classroom, detonated their bombs, and the carnage is a direct result of that. This is in keeping with the insurgents' apparent desire to target Iraqi law enforcement and military facilities as a way of discouraging people from joining what they see as an illegitimate operation.
And let's not forget what Donald Rumsfeld said yesterday, quote, we need to stop defining success in Iraq as the absence of terror attacks, end quote. He also said war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Bush says the economy is doing well, but that's crazy. Where's he getting that information? We're going to get into that, I think, a little later. But first, I'd like to talk about this. Yesterday, a judge in Texas dismissed the conspiracy charges against Tom DeLay. DeLay and his co-defendant fundraisers, John D. Caliandro and James W. Willis, are certainly not in the clear, folks. I look at this as actually a good thing. The judge dismisses the charges on the grounds that the conspiracy provisions in the state election code did not go into effect until a year after the charges. But the money laundering, that's a different issue. And as you said earlier, Riley, the fact that they're letting this stuff stick, he can't go back now and try to get off of these. It's a done deal. He's out of work. He's not going to be the Speaker of the House anymore. That's not going to happen. He's crippled politically.
Majority leader. Pastors and speaker. Right. But see, here's the significant thing. This means that the House Republican conservative agenda is at risk because there's no guarantee that Roy Blunt, the tobacco guy, is going to be able to actually pick up where Tom DeLay left off. He seems to be right now the heir apparent for the majority leadership gig. But remember, they've got a raft of things, including tax cuts for the wealthy, cutting benefits for people, and all these other things that they have as an agenda. And if they can't have a strong majority, if they don't have a strong majority leader, that agenda dies. That's what's the real significance of Tom DeLay not being able to go back.
And Dick Cheney threw him a line yesterday, went down and threw a fundraiser for him. So our, you know, our politically crippled vice president goes down there to help this politically crippled dwarf king of the GOP's legislative pig pack. I hope the whole thing crumbles soon.
Well, you know,
sooner the better. And I don't mean to be partisan.
Shouldn't people be asking themselves, why is a vice president raising money for someone who's been indicted on criminal charges?
Because he's
criminal charges.
Because Cheney's the Antichrist.
What's next for him? A Tookie Williams fundraiser?
Exactly. I guess quickly, look, Bush is going to try and sell this idea that the economy is doing well. He's going to say that there's 215,000 new jobs in November. He'll state that the economy has rebounded from the hurricane. So he's going to underscore the importance of opening foreign markets to U.S. products and workers. And the bottom line is that you're sitting at home. How does it feel to you? I mean, how does it feel to you? Whatever he says doesn't make any difference. How much debt are you carrying? You know, how is your family? How is your wages? I mean, whatever he says has no indication is true by virtue of the fact that 63% of ordinary Americans characterize the economy as bad, very bad, or terrible. By 58% to 36% about people say economic conditions are getting worse, not better. That's 58% to 36% of the number who say the economic conditions are getting worse, not better. And the bottom line is the debt that people are carrying. I mean, that's what's a real indicator to me. Households are now spending 13.6% of their disposable income to service their outstanding debt. So what does that mean for people? That means that they will never get their heads above water economically. And this country is coming up on a $200 billion deficit to China.
Well, let me tell you.
So whatever lip service he's paying is crap.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the thing is, this is part of his holiday offensive, whether it's Condoleezza Rice abroad or Bush touting a non-existent economic recovery here. Ask people, you know, they never poll people and find out when was the last time anybody got a raise.
Okay? Exactly.
You know, did you get a raise last year?
Exactly.
Did you get a raise the year before? You talk to people on the street and you hear people say, I haven't had a raise in 3 years.
Yeah. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? You know, if you put that in context of inflation, no. Our next guest, you know, we had Bob Baer on last week to talk about Sirianni. Our next guest won an Oscar for a screenplay of the film Traffic in 2000. He's back this year with Sirianni, a film that takes on the corrupt world of big oil, something that we sort of talk about in one way or another every day. Stephen Kagan wrote and directed the film. He joins us live in the studio this morning. Good morning, Stephen.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Well, thanks for coming down. You know, we love having Bob Baer on. It was very interesting to talk to him about what's going on in the world, because he's a very honest guy. What brought you to him, and how did you guys hook up initially?
I want to talk about the economy, man. I want to talk about how the growth in the GDP isn't being translated into the wages of, you know, working people.
That's good.
In America right now, I mean, this is, you know, if you're a shareholder of ExxonMobil, you're doing great.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if you have to, you know, pay your own health care out of your minimum wage job, you're in big trouble.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, you know, the reason 65% of the people think the economy is heading in the wrong place is because the benefits are only going to 2% of the people. I mean, really. And it's like, it's just, it's kind of a shame. And you say, how do you feel being American right now? I mean, you know, let's not forget, We're now the country that dusted off the gulags that Solzhenitsyn wrote about to torture people, to, you know, export torture into the old Soviet satellite states that we couldn't do at home. You know, we're the America of Abu Ghraib. You know, in the wake of 9/11, we had this precipitous, crazy language response to, you know, this war on terror. We're fighting evildoers all over the globe. We're going to have a crusade. And you got to wonder, you know, we're the America that, you know, saved Europe from fascism. We fought communism, a totalitarian ideology all over the globe. You know, we got off track a little bit in Southeast Asia, but we meant well. You know, and now it's like, do you feel like we still wear the white hat? You know, when you think about our position in the world, and if you're lucky enough to get to travel, you know, and you see how we fit into the big picture, it's like, what are the, you know, what are we exporting, you know, as Americans right now? Are we exporting the ideas of representational government or of torture?
Well, you know,
I think that sinks into all of us.
In your film, you certainly cover. I mean, I enjoyed the movie a lot, and it was great for me to see it because I've appreciated Bob Baer's work. But you really start to talk about the hypocrisy, and you start to show the hypocrisy of the government's relationship with oil owning or oil producing nations, and also the government's relationship and oil producing nations' relationship with capitalist interests. So you got that triangulation going, and then you had the very intimate story, sort of running through it, of what becomes a terrorist action. So it seems to me that your film, more than some films I've seen lately, there's only been two films I've seen this year that actually are honest about the way the government operates in the world, is really out there to provide people with some truth about how this thing really works.
I think the important thing to remember is, you know, we're talking about, do you need limits on self-interest? You know, and capitalism's an incredibly efficient system, a positive system. You know, you can look at the good things, you know, these Grameen bank loans, microeconomic lending to underprivileged places that empower people. You know, it works. It's not all bad. A lot of what I'm talking about in the movie and a lot of Bob Baer's own experience took place on Bill Clinton's watch. You know, the effect of money, you know, the thing is, the oil business is an incredibly simple business. You know, honestly, any of us could become an expert at it in about a week. You know, you stick a straw in the ground, there's this giant pool of money, and it starts spurting up into the air, and you just hold out
underground pool of money.
You just hold buckets, and the money rains down into the buckets, you know, and it's billions, if not trillions, of dollars. And that money creates a black hole into which everything gets sucked, light, morality, and everything that comes in contact with it gets screwed royally.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what it is. And so you've got to say, you know, you look at the Dukester, you know, Randy Cunningham last week.
I mean,
this is the biggest story I've seen. Honestly, I can't believe it. Like, you're talking about, you know, Scanlon and DeLay. I think Scanlon turning state's evidence, I think 50 seats in Congress are going to come up literally in the next 4 years. It's unbelievable. But
Just to refresh your listeners' memories, this was a bribery. Duke Cunningham was convicted.
$2.4 million.
Okay. Yeah, but let's just cut to what's important about this. Okay.
We're talking to Stephen Gagan, the writer and director of Syriana.
Gagan. But what's interesting about the Dukester, Randy Cunningham, he's a congressman from San Diego. He's living on a boat. He's accepting money from military contractors, but he's living on a yacht. His nickname's Duke. It's called the Dukester, S-T-I-R, like stir a cocktail.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Potomac Basin. It's a yacht in sight of the Capitol building. This man drives a Rolls Royce. He lives on a yacht. Both are paid for by military contractors. He's leaving his yacht in the Potomac Basin, getting into his Rolls Royce on a congressman's salary, driving up the hill to the Capitol to, like, lead our government. Nobody says boo. This goes on for years in the place I call Nigeria on the Potomac.
Mm-hmm.
The corruption's just out in the open. You can buy the politicians. Nobody says, hey, what's this guy doing driving a Rolls Royce, living on a yacht? Nobody cares. He gets caught by local journalists back in San Diego who notices he sold his house to a military contractor who resold it in a boom market for $700,000 less than he paid for it. And the guy says at home in San Diego, hey, there could be a problem here. You know, now he's contrite. You know, he's contrite. He failed constituents. He cried.
He cried because he got caught.
They always cry. Yeah. And the fact is, you know, you ask yourself, why did nobody notice this anomaly?
Because everybody's busy trying to do the same thing.
Because people in glass houses don't throw stones.
Exactly.
I think we're coming to the end of a system. I think we're coming to the end of a period where we say, all right, how does capitalism fit with our democracy in the United States? How do they fit together?
Well, let's finish the conversation in just a second. We're talking to Stephen Gagan, the writer and director of Syriana, the film with George Clooney playing a character based on Robert Baer, who was on our show last week. And I know that you know, outside of talking about politics here in this country, I'd like to hear some of the stories, because I heard that you yourself, it got sort of dangerous for you just to go around the world and prepare for this movie. Is that true?
I don't know.
Exciting?
Sometimes.
Come on.
Fun?
Good stories?
Well, you're traveling in Beirut with a guy who wrote a book about infiltrating Hezbollah.
That's good. Hold that thought. 17 past the hour. We'll be back with Stephen Kagan.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Christopher Hedges is in the wings to enlighten us about the Christian fascist movement. In the studio right now, Stephen Kagan is here, the director of Syriana, the writer and director of Syriana. He won an Academy Award for writing Traffic in 2000. Syriana is scheduled for a wide release on Friday, December 9th. There's some great performances in this movie. I thought Clooney was great. I thought Damon was great. There isn't a bad performance in the film. And in leading up to making the film, you had to do quite a bit of research. And what happened in Beirut? Because this sounded like an interesting story to me.
Sure did.
Well, I arrived over there by myself. I'd been with Bayer actually in Paris, and
Bob Bayer,
who's was our former Iraqi bureau chief, and a guy who really had written a book that was the number one bestseller in Beirut at that time, where he talked about infiltrating Hezbollah. So, I arrive at the airport. I'm in customs. My cell phone rings. It's an acquaintance of an acquaintance of Bob Bayer, and he says this great line. He says, "I have something really special you can do, but you have to do it right now, and I can't tell you what it is." And I said, right now? He said, yes, right now. My driver's out front. He'll pick you up. So I clear customs. I get in the back of a car with a guy. We're rolling down the highway from the airport. And it'd be like you're leaving JFK on a highway, except there's no guard barriers. So you're just driving along, and suddenly you just take a right, arbitrarily, off the highway. Uh-huh. And you're like, oh, my God, where are we going? So we're bombing down through these streets in this neighborhood all of a sudden, and I notice everyone has guns, like in their waistbands, just out in the open, shoulder rifles. And then a gate comes down across the road, like a private gate, public road, and these men come to the car, and they're polite, sort of. They're speaking Arabic, but they take my backpack, my belt, my pins, and they take me out of the car, and they lead me across the gate to another car. They put me in the back and blindfold me, and then I'm being driven through the streets. I don't have my phone anymore or anything, and I'm obviously blindfolded in the back of a car with a bunch of men with guns. And I had two thoughts. I thought, one, wow, you're really over your head here, you idiot screenwriter from Hollywood. And the second one was, try to pay attention to every detail because it's just such an astonishing experience. They led me up into a place that was like a government building from the 70s, like low, wide couches and kind of cool architecture, actually. Took the blindfold off, and I was looking at men sort of laughing about the night before, it looked like, with guns stuck in their waistbands and sort of this opaque windows with figures moving back and forth behind it. And they led me into a room to meet the leaders of Hezbollah. And a couple minutes later, the guy who called me showed up. He apologized for being late, and he said he would translate. And so I got to have an interview with these guys, the leaders of Hezbollah. And it was amazing. The first thing out of the mouth of the head of Hezbollah was, I love Traffic. It's a very good movie.
Why should that surprise you? Kim Jong-il is a big movie buff, too, apparently.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the second thing was, he said, he's a very serious guy, and he said, I'm the first person in the Muslim world to issue a fatwa, an edict, on cloning Dolly the sheep. And I thought, Dolly the sheep. And he said, yep, cloning is okay for health care, but not to replicate a human. I said, I agree with you.
And then that was it?
We talked for a long time.
Oh, good.
He said something quite chilling, actually, because this was in 2002 in the run-up to the Iraqi war. Mm-hmm. And he said, I believe America's a good country. I believe Americans are kind people. They're host to over 10 million Muslims. He said, up to now, it's been very easy to separate the will of the American people from the will of the U.S. government. And he said, but if you go into Iraq on these flimsy reasons, it'll no longer be possible to make that distinction anywhere in the globe.
Wow.
And I thought, it was really chilling because this guy runs a terrorist organization, what we call terror. He says he's the local government, but we call him a terrorist organization. And he is, they do terrorist acts. And it was really a chilling a chilling thing to hear.
I think that we're talking to Stephen Gagan, the writer and director of Sirion. I think that some of that is captured in the film, the human moments with these people that are you know, very powerful and in some lights very evil. Now, what I want to know, if you can do it, give it to me in about a minute, is in define, you know, what is the most, what was the most significant or moving moment of the film for you? If you, when you look at your film, what defines that film for you?
I love the moment where Matt Damon's talking to Amanda Peet, and they've had a tragedy in their family. They're sitting on a park bench in Geneva, and he's spouting off about how he's now next to power, and he could be like, they could be like Mossadegh in the 50s, and they could change this whole region, right, and create a Congress and a parliament. And then he's so fired up about it, and he also slips in, and it's like a giant ATM got deposited on our lawn, and he's just being really human about it. And she says this devastating line to him, and as he's muttering to himself, he says, "I did everything right. I did everything right." And I to me, that's an incredibly American moment, which is, we mean well, we want to change the world. Also, our self-interest is riding, and just behind it, we don't quite know where the line is drawn, and yet we're also telling ourselves in a self-pitying way that we're the good guys.
I remember that moment well, and it's a great moment. That moment where it's like you realize you're selling your soul, but you've justified it for yourself.
Exactly.
Stephen Gagan, it was great talking to you. Sirianni is
Thanks
scheduled
a
for a wide release this Friday, and you really should see it because it's an education and it's a great movie.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I appreciate you talking. We'll be back with Christopher Hedges to talk about Christian fascism in America. It's 27 past the hour.
Listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Celebrate the one-year anniversary of Air America Radio. We're pleased to present another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
Well, as you know, Jews have been telling him they're being rounded up by the Germans, placed on trains, and sent to work camps that are actually death camps. The Jews have pleaded for help, but he has refused and wants to stay neutral in the war. Thanks to him, countless Jews are dying. So, for ignoring the slaughter of, I don't know, maybe around 5.9 million or so Jews, Pope Pius XII is Morning Sedition's Dog of the Week.
Wow. Speaking about dogs, Riley, I just found out why they call Rommel the Desert Fox.
Why?
Well, it's pretty keen, and I think we'll talk about it after this.
This has been another great moment in Morning Sedition history.
All right, it's 35 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
This is Morning Sedition. Our next guest is one of our favorite guests. He's here to talk about the religious rights plan to take over Ohio. He's the author of Losing Moses on the Highway, The Ten Commandments in America, and War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. Chris Hedges is a great friend of Morning Sedition. It's great to have him in studio this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Morning,
Thanks,
Chris.
Mark. Thanks.
You're going to tell us some stuff about Kenneth Blackwell that some of us, I had no idea. We all know that he helped the Republicans steal the election one way or the other, but I had no idea the depth of how he is facilitating in creating the template for the Christian fascist overthrow of this country.
He's become one of the most important figures, not only, of course, in Ohio, but I think nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he is essentially spearheading the process by which the Christian right, and this is, of course, their focus, will take over state government first. He's, of course, the lieutenant governor in Ohio. He oversaw the at the same time he was head of the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign in 2004. But it was his job to oversee the vote. And you know, Mark Crispin Miller and others have written about numerous irregularities in Ohio, which, of course, it was Blackwell's job to investigate and curtail, none of which was done. But he's aligned himself with a group called the Ohio Restoration Project, and that's a group that was formed last spring by religious and political leaders whose stated goal is to wage spiritual warfare and bring a living savior to a dying world. And they're now touring Ohio to recruit 2,000 patriot pastors and 100 what they call intercessors or faithful servants of prayer. They do that online, and 200 Minutemen volunteers, and they all have to register 300 new voters, essentially to support Blackwell around the wedge issues of abortion, gay rights, school prayer.
Now, this guy, the guy who leads the Reformation Ohio, is a guy named Rod Parsley, and these guys are under his spell, and you can sort of hear why from this this clip of Rod Parsley.
Reformation Ohio will also set itself to the task of registering 400,000 new voters. It's a bold agenda, but it's an agenda demanded by our times and commanded by our God. We will certainly have our critics. Indeed, some have already spoken against us. Others will attempt to relegate us to our houses of worship and attempt to intimidate us into retreating from our efforts to effect meaningful change beyond the four walls of our houses of worship. But I've got news for you. Our critics cannot claim to know who we are or who sent us or who empowers us.
Wow, that's chilling to me. And you were at that? That was on the steps of the state house?
I wasn't at that one, but I was in Dayton at one of their Patriot Pastors rallies, which Blackwell spoke at. I mean, other than sort of guys with buzz cuts and brown shirts, it was probably as close as I've ever come to attending a fascist rally. The symbol of the movement is a American flag with the cross superimposed on top of it. There were people dressed in sort of red, white, and blue outfits singing uplifting Christian hymns about spiritual warfare while they showed pictures of the war in Iraq. Blackwell is very clear to this hard right group, and we're talking about James Dobson, James Kennedy, I mean the worst of what we call the Christian Reconstructionists or the Christian Dominionists, people who want to create a theocratic state. I mean, for instance, Blackwell told the crowd, you will hear me, this is a quote, you will hear me asked in public whether I believe in a theocracy, and you will hear me say, no, I believe in a plurality, but do not be mistaken. You and I both know the only way to salvation is through Jesus Christ, our Creator. There was a long sort of rap-like clip that he showed, a video clip called, Jesus the King. The message is clear, and if you look, and I encourage all your listeners, especially those in Ohio, to go on, visit Blackwell's government site, www.sosstate.oh.us, and click on Build Character and follow the links. And they have, and they've done this with some other states, and essentially it is now become the blueprint by which, they can get hard-right Christian people into power, and Blackwell's, of course, ahead in the polls, most likely to become the next governor of Ohio, and they have this sort of bullet point system called Uncommon Sense, and it's sort of Orwellian 20-point treatise that is a map to guide diverse people toward a united common character culture.
Chris Hedges, two-part question. One, how is Blackwell's dalliance with these Christian conservatives playing within the context of the mainstream Ohio Republican Party, and how is he playing, because Kenneth Blackwell is African-American, how is he playing to black Ohioans?
Well, I think, one of the things that the hard Christian right or the radical Christian right has sought to do over some time is reach out to the African-American community, and especially, of course, the African-American church. That has not been terribly successful, in large part because these people come out of the segregationist movement. If you trace their lineage, it goes right back to the John Birch Society.
The Reconstructionists?
Anti-Communist League. I mean, not only have they expressed virulent anti-Semitism in the past, but also really raw racism.
Yes.
And when I went to this Patriot Pastors meeting in Dayton, one of the first slides that they put up to show the gathering of Patriot Pastors was actually pictures of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
And they have worked very hard to try and portray themselves as the new civil rights movement.
Well, Rod, it sounds to me like Rod Parsley is taking a vocal lesson, that there is something about the way he is presenting his delivery that is very civil rights preacher-like. in its tone.
And Blackwell does the same thing.
Uh-huh. And now let's talk about these 20 points, because I want people to understand exactly how fascism is being hidden in this message. Outside of them blatantly saying we want a theocracy, that God is right and that's what should judge this country, that's what should rule this country, is the dominion of Christ. You know, how are they fooling people? Where is the trick?
Well, look at the, you know, read through them. I mean, for instance, they have, of course, 20 different points. They've already made Ohio, along with five other states, a state of what they call character.
Mm-hmm.
Accountability, they mm-hmm. say. This is some, you know, a character asset that they will now promote. The government, they're seeking federal funding for this through No Child Left Behind. Accountability, they say. High character people scrutinize themselves and welcome the scrutiny of others. They acknowledge that human nature compels us toward independence. Our preference for independence results in isolation from one another. Isolation breeds temptation to unethical conduct. High character people resist this chain reaction by adopting transparent life and work styles that invite inspection.
Mm. So they are sort of couching this in a kind of like, this will help you. A lot of the mega churches are doing this now. They're almost taking Jesus out of the service and making it a self-empowerment movement that is based on a community. So these are ways to sort of trick them into feeling that they are supported and they are part of this larger operation, which is being operated and run into politics by these Christians who want to change the government.
Yeah, I mean, the list of the, you know, uncommon sense, these 20 points are get to the core of Christian dominionism,
right?
But of course they use secular language,
right?
But when you read it closely within the paragraphs, what they're really promoting, and I think the passage I just read illustrates that, are concepts of submission, of complete obedience to a moral authority, which of course is Christian, to the open inspection of personal lives of people, to the loss of personal rights and freedoms. That are the very hallmark and foundation of the American democracy. That is what they are doing, quite cleverly, and what they are about to do in states like Ohio. These people are on the verge of taking power.
Chris Hedges, when do you think, I mean, obviously Ken Blackwell had a metamorphosis. He was not exactly this conservative when he was mayor of Cincinnati. When do you think he changed? Why do you think he changed?
I think it's about power. I mean, I don't know the man. I've heard him speak. But I think it's all about power. And if you look at the leadership of this movement, you know, people like Richard Land, the person who's orchestrated the sort of purging of the Southern Baptist Convention and turning it into a political movement, James Dobson, James Kennedy, these are pretty cynical people who understand the forces of mass manipulation. They know how to play on people's despair. Many of the people in the movement themselves, I think, are decent, honest people who seek to create a society with some moral fiber, but they're being, of course, used and manipulated by, let's be very clear as well, very well-funded. These people have a lot of money. The big corporations, big foundations like Olin, Mellon, they're all behind these people because along with this authoritarian or theocratic agenda that they're pushing is a complete deregulation of society and a return to the kind of baron robber capitalist nightmare that existed in this country at the end of the 19th century.
Wow. So this seems to me, Chris Hedges, what you're saying is that, you know, Blackwell has obviously served the party in doing their evil deeds before. He is trying to wedge himself in to the Republican Party by setting an example of how the forces of capitalism, the forces of the religious right, and the forces of American politics can converge in him and do everything that is bad, that is potentially bad about a government out of control.
That's essentially what we're seeing, and I think that, you know, they have targeted, the religious right has now targeted a few states. We have Judge Roy Moore, of course, running to be the governor of Alabama, and we have Blackwell running to take Ohio, and this movement is sort of moving forward at a frightening and alarming pace, and without any kind of real scrutiny.
How can we stop it?
Well, I think, first of all, excuse me, that many in the mainstream press who don't get the movement, and having spent most of my career in the mainstream press, I plead guilty on behalf of many of my colleagues, they don't get the gravity of the movement. This is not a religious movement, and I say this as somebody who grew up in the church and who graduated from seminary. This is a political movement that has seized upon and used religious and patriotic symbols to essentially create a totalitarian system.
Wow. Now, is there any place? I know that you're working on a book to really to show the world what this is about. Is there any resources that people can go to now to see the progress of this or to get more information about it? Are you contributing anywhere? Are you putting anything together that's immediately accessible? Do you know of anything?
I did the cover story for Harper's Magazine in May, called The Religious Right and the War on America.
Yes.
There are a few people out there. Media Matters is a website. They monitor a lot of the statements by people like Pat Robertson.
And, MediaMatters.org.
Yeah, and you can check out, read the raw material. Although, frankly, it's accessible for anybody who wants to turn the dial on their radio. You can listen to these Christian stations, so purportedly Christian stations, and listen to what their vision is, because they speak one way to their believers and another way to the mainstream society.
And that's something you said that you saw in your studies of Hitler recently, is that Hitler kind of couched his initial anti-Semitic vitriolic speech because it wasn't working with the constituents, if you can call that, and basically toned it down and sublimated it, right?
Well, yeah, there's a great book I'm reading called The Nazi Conscience by Claudia Kunz. And in it, she talks about how at the beginning of the sort of movement of National Socialism, Hitler's movement, it was just rabid anti-Semitism and vitriolic hate statements. But then, as he reached out to the mainstream, he realized that this was never going to sell. And after Hitler took power in 1933, there were almost no anti-Semitic comments ever made. He made none. He denounced the sort of excesses of the attacks on Jews, and he ran essentially on a moral agenda.
Wow.
And what they did over time, and of course over a period of years, what the Nazi dictatorship did was essentially destroy the framework of public culture and political culture while giving people the appearances that they were still operating inside of it. And I think we're seeing much the same kind of process here. There is a very powerful movement that is transforming our society from the inside while leaving the sort of veneur, the kinds of words that we use, the kind of institutions that still exist, but that, of course, are being gutted and put in the service of this ideology, such as the judiciary in place.
Wow. So this is it's not too late to stop this, folks. It's not too late to raise awareness of this, and it's not too late to mobilize against it. I appreciate all the work you're doing, Chris Hedges. It's always great to see you.
Thanks,
Chris.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Okay, 49 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We will come back with some funny.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're putting it down for the day. Look, tomorrow, there's some things we didn't get to today that we want to get to. We want to talk about the lionizing of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, don't blame me for that. I just said he looked a little charismatic on TV.
The implications of making a global spectacle out of a deposed leader's trial, one that was the leader of a country that is in chaos, and what are the implications of that to that country and to the world, and how are people reacting to it? We want to talk about that tomorrow, so look forward to that. We're also going to get a little more in depth with the with Bush's pitch on how the economy is bouncing back. If you've got some thoughts on that, you might want to shoot us an email at sedition@airamericaradio.com. How's that economy working out for you? How's your debt? Is it all a lie? I think it is. Also, we're going to talk about the numbers in Iraq. The Nation magazine recently put out a big list of what is really going on there in terms of money and lives lost and how that is panning out if you look at all the numbers in a row and what that looks like. We'll get into that a little bit as well, Riley.
Yeah.
And we're going to have my buddy Jack Bulware is going to get on the phone with us. He's got some adventures out there in paradise. He's a sort of a renegade travel writer who recently had an experience of going on a plane with the beak of a swordfish that he was able to get through several series of customs.
What?
Yeah, I'll tell you, you'll hear it from Jack's mouth tomorrow.
Uh-oh.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the show. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. President Bush, in a speech yesterday, told Americans that the economy is much better than they think it is. Most people give the president sole credit for the economic boom. Even Bush's harshest critics concede he's the one who made it up. Bush said he expected manufacturing jobs to pick up soon, pointing out his own administration's pressing need to manufacture excuses. A Chicago man is suing Microsoft over the new Xbox 360, saying it has design flaws that make it overheat and crash. The plaintiffs plan to present the machine's original name as their main proof, the Defectbox 360. The suit alleges that the failure of the man's Xbox profoundly affected his quality of no life. A Microsoft spokesman countered by saying, quote, overheating may be caused by some customers' stomach folds blocking air vents as they clamp onto the machines in orgasmic sleep, end quote. A cafe in Chicago posted a sign saying children of all ages have to behave and use their indoor voices, which ignited debate over misbehaving kids in public places. To discourage kids from eating in his restaurant, one owner has instructed all waiters to tell children if they move just a little or try to talk at all, the boogeyman under the table will bite their legs off. Yeah. Phrase of the day, just drop this in the conversation. According to the president, the economy is great, and he's right, it is great if you're a multinational corporation building 14 army bases in Iraq and the president is in your hip pocket. Wake up, sheeple. There are two economies. The good one for rich people who buy politicians and get tax breaks, and the real one for everyone else. Wow, Riley, this was quite a show, man.
It
ran the gamut. I feel like we've been on a journey.
It's been action-packed all morning long.
I'll see you tomorrow. It's good, good
see
work.
See you tomorrow. Good day. And tomorrow, as you mentioned, Jack Boulware and Bob Sullivan to talk tech, man, because that's some deep stuff,
important.
Too.
Important.
Enjoy yourself. Have a good day. This is Air America Radio.
Sedition on Air America Radio.